This week on the Finding Impact podcast, we're kicking off a new series on hardware entrepreneurs. This one with William Maluki of Gearbox about creating tools for manufacturing in Africa.
FindingImpact.com. FindingImpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.
Hey everyone, my name is Andy Narricot. I'm the founder of Finding Impact, the show with an audience of real social entrepreneurs who are serving the base of the pyramid with products and services, who want to learn from people who've done it before, tried and failed a few times, have important lessons to share. This is the first in a three-part series on invention-based entrepreneurs, created with support from the Lemerson Foundation. This three-part series aims to provide some unique insights into some of the challenges and workarounds that invention-based entrepreneurs face in creating physical products in emerging markets. So a couple of really quick announcements. First of all, please sign up to the newsletter at findingimpact.com. I really recommend that. We've had some really good feedback. One listener said, "No big revelations from me, but these roundups are fantastic." So just a thank you. That's something that landed in my inbox. Another said, "I very much enjoy your column." So people appreciate it. Make sure you are receiving it too. We get a roundup of recent episodes. Look at one of the from the back catalogue. I give you tips, resources, really important stuff from around the web, which I think you need to know about, and gets into your inbox every couple of weeks. So make sure you head on over to findingimpact.com and click the Join the Community Now button on the homepage. Can't miss it. They're right there, front and center. The other announcement is that we're creating a highly actionable playbook for the invention-based entrepreneur. So as a result of these series, these hardware entrepreneur series, we've done a whole bunch of interviews with leaders in the field, going deep on all aspects of the challenges of inventing physical products and bringing them to market, and the workarounds and the hacks that these successful invention-based entrepreneurs have managed to achieve. So we're bringing it all to you in a very pithy, actionable content. Everything from hiring teams, raising funds, to create minimal viable product, to launch strategies. So everything there, we're summarizing it all in an easy-to-read, actionable playbook to help you on your invention journey. It'll be available only to those who go to findingimpact.com/invention. Leave a name, a few details, and we will send it right over to your inbox as soon as it's done. So make sure you head over to findingimpact.com/invention. Now onto the episode. This interview is with William Maluki, who's been referred to by some as the MacGyver of Kenya. So anyone seen the show MacGyver? An amazing inventor, a bit fictional, but it was amazing. And I think it couldn't be an amazing title for William. We talk about how to hire when there's a lack of skilled talent, especially that are knowledgeable in advanced manufacturing technologies in Africa. We talk about working with contract manufacturers when it's not the norm to deliver on, to time and to deliver high quality products and components that you need for advanced manufacturing. And we talk about financing challenges and how to overcome them. So lots here with William. Fantastic interview. I'm really excited for this one. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I give you William Maluki. Hi everyone, I've got William Maluki here, and we're going to talk about his marvelous invention, marvelously named the Kunjabot, which is a prime example I'm going to share with you of successful local invention and manufacturing. William is in Kenya, and you know he's faced some of the difficult barriers that many hardware entrepreneurs are facing in emerging markets. So William is going to share all. William works at Gearbox, which is a prototyping space in Nairobi, Kenya. And that is where, hardware entrepreneurs go they provide a maker space. And they provide everything that hardware entrepreneurs might need as well, so from mentorship and training to investment and working space. So an incredible facility. which is much in need across the rest of the continent. But we're going to talk to some of the challenges that hardware entrepreneurs might face, and then getting William to share his experience about how he's overcome some of those challenges in bringing his Conjurebot to the market. But first, William, welcome onto the show.
Thank you, Andy. It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to sharing my experiences in this journey.
Brilliant. But let's crack on first with the first question. What is the Conjurebot?
Yes, the Conjurebot is actually a concatenation of two words. One is in Kiswahili, kunja, which basically means bend. Uh-huh. And the other one is bot, basically a robot.
Yeah, we know so, bot, yeah.
Yeah. So Conjurebot is actually an automatic pipe bender specifically designed for use by people in the Jua Kali sector in Kenya.
Brilliant. So so what does it do? What was the sort of problem with the previous or the existing challenge with pipe bending? So what is this improving or solving? What problem is this solving for?
Yes, the problem currently experienced by the Jua Kali artisans is quality. They actually are involved in the manufacturing of various wares.
And before quality, we go on, William, sorry, what is Jua Kali for those who don't know?
Oh, yeah. Jua Kali is the informal manufacturing sector in Kenya. Jua Kali is actually Swahili for hot sun, which is homage to the harsh condition they actually work under.
Brilliant. Okay, now we got, sorry, carry on. So you've created the machine for, which is essentially the mass market of workers who are working under the hot sun in the informal sort of manufacturing sector. So it's sort of a move towards formalization, professionalization.
That's correct. Yes, currently the challenge they are facing right now is competition from imported products, which have a superior quality. They're even cheaper because they are produced using mass manufacturing technologies that these people, they don't currently have. So the problem that I'm solving is I'm trying to give them some kind of a mass manufacturing access at a rate or rather a cost that they can afford given their humble financial status, and also improve their quality and maximize their profit margin in the process.
Yeah, and is the quality is that one of the challenges that you know they need to improve on and the market needs?
Yes. Today, if you ask any Nairobian if they will buy anything from the Jua Kali people, they will tell you for sure they would if the quality would improve. Because there is this natural urge to compare what the Jua Kali people make with the crude tools that they use with, you know, imported or even articles that are made in the mainstream manufacturing sector that leverages on, you know, high technology.
Mm. So yes. You've got improved quality, and that sort of improves things like tolerances as well.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. So it sort of opens up their, you know, what Jua Kali can do to much bigger options. And as you say as well, you say it allows rapid manufacturing. So it's sort of a step towards mass manufacturing rather than just sort of say, you know, handwork, manual labor.
It is. That's correct. So the way it actually opens up the mass manufacturing door to these people is, you know, you can actually save up, you know, part files in the machine itself and call it up and produce however many copies you need as the orders come in. So it gives them that flexibility to mass manufacture, you know, parts that look exactly like the previous one, like, you know, parts that actually come out of a big manufacturing plant. While at the same time, it does this on a pay-as-you-bend model, which means they don't have to, you know, to hustle and actually get, you know, the huge funds that they would otherwise need to install such an equipment.
Say that again. So it's a pay-as-you-bend model. So if people don't have to buy the machine, they can just go in and use the machine on a one time, the pay for one-time use.
Exactly. That's exactly, how I'm solving the access issue when it comes to financing. Most of these people can't afford to buy the machine, which is pretty expensive, like you would expect. However, I'm building my business around having these machines strategically located right next to the places they work from. So when they actually get an order from a client, they will walk up to the machine, use mobile money, which is kind of big here in Kenya, and they would, buy tokens using mobile money. And that would allow them to actually just spend just a little bit of money on each product. So that is that allows them very good accessibility because it's cheaper and they don't have to contend with, maintenance and operational costs associated with running such a sophisticated piece of equipment.
Brilliant. So you're dotting them around the city that you're financing the machines yourself and then you're charging a pay-as-you-go model to get them into the using, overcome that financing challenge. Give us a sense of your size at the moment and stage you're at. I mean, how many of these machines do you have actually in the market at the moment?
So this is a model that I'm yet to actually roll out because of the challenges that I'm actually going to highlight in a short while. Currently, I only have two machines. And I'm at version 2, which means I'm still iterating, what you would call a prototype, but it's actually a functional prototype.
Yeah. Okay, great. So we're going to get into that in a sec about all the challenges and why, it takes time. But just getting to where you are, overcome incredible odds. And you're working with Gearbox. Now, tell us a little bit about Gearbox and, has that sort of enabled you to do what you're doing?
I'm working with Gearbox at the moment as the head of engineering. I'm actually the head of engineering at Gearbox. However, KunjaBot, it's actually an individual initiative, and it's actually a machine that I've designed under my own company by the name Casper Technologies Limited. So I'm basically using Gearbox, the savings that I get from Gearbox to bootstrap and enable my, company takeoff. At the same time, working at Gearbox being a hardware space, I've been able to, do a little bit of capacity building because we have members of our engineering staff who are fresh graduates from school. And they've been involved in my project because they see it as a learning opportunity. And then thirdly, of course, being a hardware space, we have a lot of equipment here that we can actually use to build the technology. And it's in line with the goals and mission of Gearbox as an organization.
Brilliant. So this is Gearbox providing all this incredible support to other inventors and hardware entrepreneurs as they emerge. How long has Gearbox been around for, and has it been partnering with anyone else in Kenya?
Gearbox has been around for about 5 years now. In fact, we still consider Gearbox to be a startup in its own right. However, it's a startup with a lot of support from big companies, from the US mainly, because we are a nonprofit. The whole idea behind Gearbox is to equip a space, a common user space, where hardware entrepreneurs can actually converge and take advantage of in a bid to improve, or rather, spur hardware economic growth, so to speak.
Yeah, so it's just vital for economic development, trying to compete with cheap imports, to build that manufacturing sector, and amazing. Are you supported by the government of Kenya as well?
As Gearbox, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, because this is, you know, adding so much benefit to the economy.
So, yeah, I mean, that would be the assumption that anybody would make, but I hope I'm not rubbing people the wrong way, but I can say, and this is just my opinion, I don't think we're receiving as much support as the government should, given the kind of impact that we hope to have in the general populace of the nation.
Well, you know, hopefully that will change and, you know, it will be recognized as the incredible work you're doing to support the economy. But let's not go there. Let's stick on the Kunjabot. And I'd love to now dig into some of these challenges. Now, one of the challenges you faced was a lack of awareness about some of these, you know, technologies amongst your target customers, the Juwakali. Can you expand on that and sort of give us an example?
Yes, definitely. This is actually a big challenge that we're still grappling with at the moment. The challenge really was, you know, the Juwakali people that I'm targeting, they sort of have a vague idea of how technology could improve their processes. And, you know, depending on who you speak to, they have certain misconceptions. So there's a very clear lack of exposure to help them understand, you know, what kind of equipment that they would need if at all money was not a problem, and how that would actually, basically help them improve their processes. So, for instance, the machine that I'm building, it's a pipe bender. And a pipe bender that is designed to be to basically bend tubes that have a very thick wall thickness is not necessarily the same pipe bender that would use to actually bend very thin-walled material at a more rapid rate. So it was important for the Juwakali people to evaluate their processes and choose, a machine either that is tuned up for speed and low torque, as opposed to, high torque and low speed, because these are two scenarios that may not necessarily lend themselves to, you know, to an entrepreneur who's probably involved in manufacturing of, thin-walled, frames of a product, and they have very high volumes that they need to contend with.
So you're having to, you know, there's obviously a barrier in understanding that the technology exists in the first place, that there is an other option of not just manual bending, but then the actual difference between different machines and, you know, the capabilities of those machines as well. So how are you overcoming some of these challenges with your target market? Because I think this is, you know, it's just a big group of challenges, which is about demand that you've got to do somehow by getting the customer to understand the possibility of your product and then sort of creating that demand in a way. So how are you doing that?
So I've been very lucky, being the head of engineering at Gearbox at a moment whereby we are training a group of Juwakali people sponsored by KCBF, which really stands for Kenya Commercial Bank Foundation, has really been, a blessing for me, because whenever these Juwakali people come over to our space for training, we have a chance to interact with them in detail and even have conversations around machines practically while they're using them. So slowly I've been educating them on how to size a custom machine for their own use, because the business that I'm running, I actually build machines according to these people's needs. So that's how I've been able to bridge the gap.
Yeah, so it's you know, getting the space to get the customer in and actually talk to them and show them what's possible and get them to see how the machine is working and what is possible with that. Great. So an example of another challenge you face. I mean, I think one of the ones as well is about, you know, getting the parts and the pieces to make your machine. And I think this is something that many hardware entrepreneurs face, is that it's, you know, there's the options are very limited for purchasing the parts and the pieces that you need locally, or manufacturing the parts and the pieces you need locally. How did you overcome that with making the KundraBot?
Yes, you're right. This is a big concern for any hardware innovator, because I'm building a machine, and some of the parts that I need for the machine, they are parts that I need to import, whereas some of the parts that I've designed, they are parts that I can't necessarily machine in-house. So I have to subcontract machine shops to do the manufacturing. So the challenge that I've faced is, especially for the imported parts, is the high tax that is actually levied towards anything that we import as hardware innovators, and especially because of the small scale of the imports. Because if I get an order for one machine, I'm not going to import, you know, parts for 10 machines so that I can enjoy the economies of scale. I simply don't have that capital lying around. For parts that are actually made by outsourced entities, you find that the challenge here is, you know, committing to lead times that the client really expects, because I essentially have to rely on the lead time that I'm given by the outsourced machinist. Many a times they breach the agreement on the timelines, because we are very small players. When we take maybe 3 or 4 shafts to be machined by a machine shop, they will drop that job as soon as a big car manufacturer brings in their lot of business. Mm. So this has been a big challenge. And I've employed certain strategies to sort of mitigate against these challenges. And as far as imported parts are concerned, what I've been doing is establishing a relationship, a business-to-business relationship with some of my suppliers, so that they can actually give me discount because of that loyalty. For parts that are actually being machined locally, I've actually had to build quite a database of different machine shops. I even have a rapport with some of the machinists that actually run the machines, and they are able to tell me well in advance when will be a bad time to actually give them a part to machine, and you know, vis-a-vis which is actually a better time, so that I can pick my suppliers you know, more carefully. Then the final thing, I'm trying to have some of the processes in-house, and one of the most of my parts are actually laser cut. So I'm in the process of actually building my own fiber laser cutter that is big enough to handle you know, as high as 1/2 inch of mild steel sheet metal. So I'll be having that process in-house, and I shouldn't have to rely on outsourced manufacturers. So that's how I've been able to deal with those challenges.
Amazing. So just to summarize then, from what I understand, you know, on the first hand, well, you've got the challenges for parts. There's one on the imported side, and the second on actually manufacturing those that are bespoke and designed specifically by you. And on the import side, you've got tax and other costs. And presumably time as well. So having to import, you've got the long lead times to bring in parts, and then the risk of getting stopped at, you know, at custom and demurrage and all the rest of it, which you've overcome through developing these relationships and getting discounts and stuff from your suppliers. And then from the other side, if you're having to make parts, make pieces internally, outsourcing that is just a nightmare, because you've got low volume of pieces that you're just being treated very badly. But when bigger significant clients come in, you can understand that, really. But then you're overcoming that by, you know, building the capacity internally, so building your own machines, which is phenomenal, laser cutting machine to be able to design your own machines, your own pieces and parts for your machines, and actually developing a rapport with some of the machinists so you can kind of, you know, help sort of push yourself or maintain your line and your place in the queue, so to speak. Does that summarize?
It does. And the only thing I would like to add is, time, the delay, the time challenge when it comes to imported parts doesn't play a significant role as such, because I'm able to import and clear my parts within 3 weeks.
Amazing.
Which is actually longer than it takes for some of the manufacturers to machine some of these parts. So it will probably be an issue as soon as I have all my internal processes in order, because now that will be the bottleneck.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, still a long way to go for local manufacturing to get that sort of quality of service that you need. And so briefly love to touch on funding as well. So how, I mean, there's obviously capital intensive, and you sort of mentioned previously that you obviously have a job and your savings are going towards developing your business. How, you know, obviously this has really kept you back, and you could have progressed so much quicker if you had access to grants or government support in some way. What has this meant for your business and for the progress that you've been making?
Terrific question. Yes. Funding, as I know many startup companies will attest to, is a big, big challenge. For me, what it has meant is that there's been really slow progress, because I actually started working towards the design of the KunjaBot last year around November. And it's taken me this long. I'm still iterating, in the prototype stage. However, what I've actually done to mitigate against the potential expansion that I have to do is I've been in talks with, local governments. What I mean is, in Kenya, we have a devolved system of government, and every county has their own budget. So I've been talking to, the politicians to allow me to, furnish their vocational training institutes with my machines. The beauty of this is whenever you have one big client, they are paying for many machines at a go, then it sort of catapults you to the next phase. So that's what I've been doing as far as funding is concerned. And I'm happy, at least, because I've been able to get at least two county governments to look at my proposal, which I sent to them. I've even been invited to talk about it. But in the meantime, I'm having to wear many hats, really, because I'm having to learn different, to acquire different skills so that I can have as much capacity within myself, because I simply don't have money to hire professionals to help me with some of these things, which I hope that it will actually change in the future.
Mm. What are some of those skills that you've had to acquire that have really helped you in your progress?
So, yeah, my background is actually in manufacturing engineering, which simply means that I'm more of a mechanical engineer. But the machine that I'm building, it basically needs electronic skills, electrical, and even some kind of software development. So I've actually had to learn, electronics, firmware programming, and even software development, just to get this machine up and running. Others include, simple bookkeeping, accounts. Whenever I get a potential client, I basically have to generate the quotations, process invoices, take care of tax returns to the government. Yes, so currently I'm doing, 95% of all these skills that I've just mentioned.
Amazing. And so you obviously have to, acquiring a lot of these skills yourself, which is phenomenal. Now, sort of back to version two, and you mentioned you've got a couple of them out in the market. So this is generating revenue for you. So is that sort of easing the financial situation?
Well, yes, it is. But it has actually meant that I've actually had to break my my desired business model. Because you remember I said my business model is actually a pay as you bend. Hmm. But I've actually had a few entrepreneurs who are more keen to buy the machine as opposed to, you know, get into a franchise kind of a model, which is what I was proposing. So, yes, I've sold about two of these machines, and that sort of eases the financial burden somewhat. But it's also risky because in the future, once I have all these machines scattered around, now these particular people that I've sold these machines to, they would very well turn out to be competition because they have the technology with them. It's just a matter of, you know, getting somebody to extend the pay-as-you-go, you know, platform to the machines.
Yeah. So, yeah, so you've obviously got two options, is to sell the machine and get other people to run the pay-as-you-bend model, or to have it internally as a workshop, or you go with the pay-as-you-bend model. I mean, what benefits does it have for you to go down the pay-as-you-bend model?
Yes, good question. So I actually ran the numbers with the help of a few experts. And if I go down the pay-as-you-bend model, you find that the return on investment, given the volumes that we forecasted, it's within a single year.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that's very lucrative if you think about it. Whereas if I actually sell a machine, I can only put so much profit margin above what the cost of the machine really is. So in terms of just financial, being financially sound, you are sort of guaranteed to a certain revenue every month. I'm able to take care of the payroll, you know, licenses, and basically run both the workshop and the office, and even fund other developments in different products if I go with the pay-as-you-bend platform. You know, when I sell, it's a one-off transaction, and there aren't too many people really interested in buying. So, yeah, strategically, it's more beneficial to me if I actually run the pay-as-you-bend model. However, it's also quite capital-intensive because it means that I have to run both maintenance and even foot the cost of actually installing the machines in these places.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like an incredibly lucrative business model and a huge demand as well. You've obviously shown, I mean, are you trying to raise investment now? Is that the long-term plan?
It is the long-term plan. In fact, I've been holding off until I actually perfect the prototype before I actually start churning them out for that particular reason, because I still think it's a little bit early for me to raise funds, especially when I'm in the prototyping phase. I wanted to bootstrap until when I'm ready to scale, then I can actually raise funds because I know precisely how I'm actually going to use the funds to scale.
So when is that? When are you? When do you think you'll be in a position? I mean, you say you're at prototype stage, and I suppose you're getting a lot of feedback on those existing versions out in the market. I mean, how many more iterations do you think you need?
Honestly speaking, I think the iteration that I'm in right now, it's good enough to actually operate as the first piloting model. So I'm looking at maybe in the next 2-3 months, I should be ready to raise funds for scaling purposes.
Exciting, exciting. So, I mean, fantastic to hear about this, William, and your experiences. And I really wish you all the best in raising funds, but also getting this out there and into the market. And it sounds like there's going to be people banging down your door for this, to working on those machines. So where should we direct people? If anyone listening want to check out a bit more about the KunjaBot and maybe Gearbox, where should we send them?
Yeah, you can direct them to you know, Gearbox website, which is www.gearbox.co.ke. Mm-hmm. I have a domain that is already reserved, but the website development is still ongoing. But for the purposes of our future, this is where you'll be able to find further information regarding what we are doing. And the website is www.caspertechnologies.com. Now, Casper is spelled K-A-S-P, three the number, then R, technologies.com. So, yeah, it's a little bit odd to have the number three instead of an E when you're talking about the word Casper as the company.
No, fantastic. Well, it's unique anyway. So, William, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about your challenges. You know, really, really good, useful for everyone listening. I look forward to hearing feedback from anyone and make sure that they reach out to William via Gearbox website if they want to speak to him directly. But thank you, William, for coming on.
Thank you very much, Andy. It's been a real pleasure sharing my experiences with you and your listeners. Thank you very much.
And that was William Maluki, the creator of the Kunjabot, and so much advice and actionable content there. I hope you agree. But that all of the insights from William and all of my other interviews and all of the support interviews that I've done as to support these invention-based entrepreneur interviews were capturing in a easily actionable, downloadable playbook, which is only available to those who sign up at findingimpact.com/invention. You leave your name and details, and that that very actionable playbook will be winging its way to you into your inbox. So make sure you head on over there and leave your details and share it around as well. So make sure that URL is known about for those who need to know. Right, that's it for me. Thank you very much again, William, for coming on. I hope you had a very enlightening episode, and we'll speak to you next week. Have a great one.
FindingImpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.